with a PhD in cultural diversity, many years of experience teaching music in international schools, and has given presentations at over 50 conferences around the world. We're very pleased and honored today to have Jennifer Walden with us on this podcast. Jennifer has mastered the craft of engaging students in musical activities that span many cultures and generations. Her approach is truly global, teaching culturally diverse understanding, awareness, and appreciation through music. I had the opportunity, the pleasure actually, of working with Jennifer as a colleague for several years at the American School of The Hague. And I was, those were just wonderful years for us. I look back at those with fond memories. And it's great to be reconnecting here with Jennifer. I've always been a fan of her work with global education. And I'm pleased that she's taking the time out of her busy schedule to speak with us today. So Jennifer, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
It's great to be here.
Okay, great. All right, so let's start off. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background as a
teacher? Yeah, that goes back a long time. But I grew up in a musical family, and I knew in my teens that I wanted to be involved in music and be a music teacher. Then as I was coming up to graduate from university, there were some choices of where we could do student teaching or practicum, and the university I was going to said, well, we do have overseas programs, and I jumped on that, thought, okay, this would be great. So I ended up in Taiwan. I think a lot of us graduate from with our first degree, a bachelor's degree in something, and I know in my 20s I thought I was very clever, but I got to Taiwan. I went with friends to what's called a night market, and suddenly heard these sounds that I thought, wait, what is that? It sounded like it was instruments, but I wasn't sure. Came around the corner and there was a full-on Beijing opera going on at the night market. That was a huge wake-up call for me, because I thought, I have no idea what these instruments are. I have no idea what those costumes are and what it all means. And what really brought that home for me was the fact that the audience did know. That was the catalyst for me. It's like, I have to know more about this. Just when I thought I knew everything, I realized how narrow my schooling had been. So that was my jump off spot, to learn as much as I could about the music, if not to learn to play the instrument, speak the language, and just not that, but then incorporate it into the classroom. Bring it into the studies we were doing, but not necessarily as a special exotic thing, but as something, a component of music that is happening, and music that is as important to some people or a person or other groups as the students' preferences. So getting across that, okay, you students might have your favorite music, but also people also have their favorite music, and it might be very different than what your music is, but it's just as meaningful. And so I continued doing that each country I lived in, and I've been in 9 different international schools, and just building on that and building methodologies and pedagogies, really, of how to do this.
Your discussion right now is aligning something with its sort of inherent in the IB, the current DP program. And that is, from which angle, which context do students look at music? Do we look at that from a local, a global, or a personal context? So this is fortuitous. It's right in line, actually, with the new curriculum and how the entry point of looking into music. So maybe you could tell us, describe for us some of the work you're currently doing in your international school.
Yeah, I teach. Well, my assignment, shall we say, is very Western sounding. It's they would say, well, she's the band person. But then the people in the school who know me, they're like, okay, wait a second. She's the instrumental music person, because it has expanded. It's opened up into a various number of groups. We have the traditional Western concert band, and then there are rock bands, popular rock and jazz music. But what we do, though, is I work with the concert bands, again, from a global perspective. We do, for example, our warm-ups aren't simply, let's see, from a band perspective, teachers would be thinking, okay, B flat concert scale. Students will learn a B flat concert scale. However, they'll also learn how to be thinking of it in terms of numbers. So as a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then once they're comfortable with that, then I say, okay, well, let's do this. We'll be taking out the fours and sevens. And so they're doing a 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 8 or high one. And then we talk about, okay, this scale you would hear more in traditional music from this part of the world, which would be more a Chinese sounding pentatonic scale. And then the next thing we would go to might be a Sunda scale from the Sunda area of Indonesia. So we're taking out the twos and the sixes. 1, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8, 7, 5, 4, 3, 1. So they're warming up with different scales. And the same thing happens in the choir. And so right away, there's that next step, that next level of awareness. And then our environment. And I'm not sure how deeply you want me to go into this in terms of what I'm doing now. But
actually, you're piggybacking on my next question. One of the cornerstones of the current IBDP curriculum is to get students to research and apply their research, connecting their unfamiliar music with familiar music. And you've already highlighted on some of those, but maybe you could give us a little bit, share some of your thoughts, more of your thoughts with the way students connect familiar music with unfamiliar music.
Yes, certainly. Another example would be looking at one of the bands did a piece that was based on Irish traditional music. So what we did was we took, okay, there's this idea that we've got these triplets, but then in some places in the music, it's happening against eighth notes, straight eighth notes, or quarter notes. And the quarter note with a triplet is fairly easy, that da 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 da. And they have played those sorts of things before. There's the familiar. Triplet, 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 triplet. That is this idea of instead of thinking triplet, triplet, or one and a two and a three and a, I would have them listen to lilting, which would perhaps be going doodle dee daddle dee da dee do dee deedle dee daddle dee doodle dee daddle dee do dee da. So having them then try singing it, singing triplets, just using the duddly, daddly, doodly, daddly, da, di da, di da, di doodly, daddly. Again, moving slowly into that unfamiliar, but connecting that to, oh yeah, triplet, triplet, or one and a two and a. And so then moving into where then the next part of the music would be where they've got the eighth notes moving against the triplets. And in Western music, it is called a hemiola, but it's not necessarily called that in other types of music. And so then having them play, so having the half of the class play perhaps a B flat concert scale, familiar, in eighth notes, the other half doing it in triplets. And the next thing you know, then they are seeing, feeling, in a place where they're comfortable with that. And so that's just one example. I can share a lot of other examples, but it's one that we just recently did. And always, always, always going with that is context. Always context. Where do these musical ideas come from? Where did lilting come from? Lilting came from the fact that sometimes they didn't have instruments, so they imitated the instruments with their voices. And looking then, of course, at dance, and looking at dance and triplets, looking at a jig and moving your feet. And being able to say, oh, okay, and especially here in the Latin American part of the world, being able to connect, so this is how we dance, this is how we move our feet in merengue, or this is how we move them in bachata, but then it's just a slightly different shift, and now we're moving in the way our feet, in the way a jig would move.
It just sounds like you're making the process, you're making unfamiliar become personal and fun and logical and relevant and purposeful.
Precisely. All those words, fantastic words, because they are. As soon as they're able to make those connections on their own, it's opened just a completely new understanding for them.
Historically, we as educators have been moved into a definition of saying, calling music Western music or non-Western music. Do you think we should avoid associating or labeling unfamiliar music as non-Western? Do you think we should just avoid the topic of Western, non-Western altogether?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just calling it music. And one of the little pieces, there are it's sort of two little pieces that I contributed to the research as I completed my PhD. And one of them is a small chart on how we can shift. Just, it's a small thing, but it makes a big difference. How we can shift from having this idea of Western, non-Western, or music and the other. And that one of the first things that I have on this chart is that we don't say things like, well, in music, this symbol means that you get louder. Or in music, this means that you're playing softly, or this means that you go back to the beginning. It should always be in this music. So you use that terminology to say, in this music, there's a symbol that looks like this, and it means to get louder. It means a crescendo in this type of music. If we look at other types of music, this is how a getting louder would be either notated or the musicians would know what to do. So I frequently in my classes, when I am, when we're doing something that is traditionally Western, again, concert band, and I hand out music, sheet music, and I always ask them, okay, what style of notation is this? And they know now, oh, this is Western notation. I'd say, well, how would you perhaps write that measure in cipher notation? Or what syllables could you use if we were talking about sargam notation? Again, it's that awareness. So always thinking about how we're talking about music so it doesn't become a, this is music, and then there's the other. And the other thing I always say in that too is when you look at it, Western music comprises about 20% of the world's music. 80% of the world's music is everything outside. And so I always try and put it all on an even playing field. And when I use examples, they're always examples from everywhere. And not, I don't exclude Western music, but it's just right out there on the same playing field.
Yeah. Throughout your career, I know you've had the opportunity of working with many young aspiring music, international music teachers. Do you think young music educators are prepared to look at international music education from a global perspective? And coupled with that, what do you think we should expect from universities in preparing music teachers for what's about to come?
Yeah, that is, in all the work I've done with young teachers, with pre-service and in-service teachers who are working, the universities are decades behind in general, and still the universities that are claiming to have world music integrated into it, it's not, you can take courses, you can take an elective course, and you might have a choice. Oh, you can take this thing called world music or world music ensembles, or you can take this course, which might be an electronic music course, or it might be looking at a specific period of Western music history. So the world music, as it's entitled, still is reinforcing this idea that it's an other in universities. Mm. The methodology classes don't teach how to be integrating, and not just integrating, but just teaching from this open perspective of it's all music. You know, it's not all based on Western music. So the teachers coming into the field are not prepared, I don't feel, because I still hear them speaking from a Western perspective. You go into their classrooms, it's still, what's on the walls still reinforces a Western perspective. I try it even at the school I'm at now. There are a lot of teachers in this department, and some are ready to go, oh, I need to rethink how I'm doing this. But the majority, they smile and just go right back to what they're doing. And that has, there are many reasons for that. But I think for me, and over the years, I have realized that it's a question of how far you want to come out of your comfort zone. And I feel, unfortunately, there are still too many teachers who don't want to take that step. And it's not a hard step to take. It's just to realize, and this leads into the next part of your question, which was, and correct me if I'm wrong, was where is music education going in terms of...
Yeah, do you see some sort of a paradigm shift coming or about to happen? Do you see a new way of thinking in terms of a global approach to teaching music?
Absolutely. For teachers who are aware and ready and have the incentive, the initiative to do that, and also administrations who are also realizing, wait a second, this the music department we have is an old, antiquated model. And we've got string orchestra, band, and choir. Whoa, we need to be doing something. And so what I see, where I see it going, is very much with having this idea, okay, the first thing being, there is so much of the world's music that is not based on notation, so it's aural learning. And then taking that perspective, thinking, all right, so aural learning also means popular music from any country, looking at any country's pop music. I was just speaking with a Thai musician yesterday who does a lot of work in Thailand and talked about this mixture of Thai music and pop music, and how his students, after they have done these mixtures of these two musics, are going, wait, oh, well, wait, I want to learn more about my own traditional music because I've tried one of the instruments from my country. And so, but looking at music from this idea of aural learning, rock and pop are all aural, and then moving into this digital area. And you and I have talked about that, and I have that happening here and on a smaller level at the moment, but you and I saw how that can explode. And then I know that you took over also some of the digital music learning at American School of the Hague too. And so we both know that, wow, there's a huge, just a huge area of music learning in the electronic field. And I really celebrate the inclusion of that too, because there are many students who are very musical, but they might not be the student who has a singing voice, and they might not be the student who has either the physical ability or just the what it takes, shall we say, to be learning an instrument, learning to play an instrument, because that's not always... That's not an easy thing. We know that it takes work to learn.
Takes time.
Yeah. But they might be super musical. They've got the chance then with digital music. And so I think music programs are doing students a disservice if they're not offering programs that do not demand, well, for example, let's go backwards. If they're offering, they need to be offering programs like pop music programs. You're learning by listening. Electronic music programs. You're being able to produce music just by what you're thinking of, your creativity in your head. And at the same time, have the instrumental program. So you've got choices, but include in that as well music from around the world. And that's where in my research and many of the workshops and publications I do, I just say, look, learn the percussion, learn the non-pitched percussion of many of these cultures. That's another wonderful gateway in. And I know that's a long answer to your question, but in a nutshell, where I see it going is it's exemplified in something that I'm involved in that we've done a few times called the Big Gig. And it includes rock pop music learning. It includes digital music learning. And then it also includes the work that I do with music from different cultures. And all of these are involving students musically, but not necessarily in the Western paradigm.
Yeah, I want to make sure that our listeners of this podcast have access and know how to get to some of your work with some of the links. Yeah. And so on. We'll talk about that after the podcast to make sure I have that listed with this. You mentioned earlier about the necessity of stepping out of your comfort zone. And I'm looking back at that now and I'm thinking, when I did that, I was scared to death. Yes. Because here I am at the final years of my career, taking over this digital program, kids coming in there, just whiz kids knowing what to do. And I just looked at that. I says, what are you doing? But in hindsight, I look at it and I see that it was such an epiphany. Because they were doing things that were incredible. They were creating music, not necessarily knowing what they were creating. So it caused us to go back and listen to what they already did and say, okay, I want to know more about why you did this and how you made that decision. So it's, again, it sort of segues to my next question. You sort of touched on this already. In your crystal ball, in your dream world, what would you like to see in the music classroom, rehearsal room 10 years from now? You've mentioned digital music, unfamiliar music, the performing ensembles and so on. Do you see the need for these to gradually bleed into one another, to merge? Or what would your vision be 10 years from now in the perfect ideal music, international global music classroom?
Yeah, I think it would really be, you know, this the old word, the student-centered, looking at that, something that is reflecting what the students are interested in and not narrowing it down to, again, band, orchestra, choir. So programs that reflect what music is happening today. Mm-hmm. And I remember as I was growing up, it really was, here's a music I like to listen to and I play, because I was an instrumentalist. I play outside of school, but then no, in school is this music, because that's what we have. That's what's offered, is this concert band and mm-hmm. some jazz band. So I would, you know, in my crystal ball would see that, would see the teachers are going, oh, wait, there's a plethora of choices mm-hmm. out here. The students can be involved in all these kinds of things, including ensembles that aren't based on a Western classical idea, so that you could have samba ensembles. Or I've run ensembles that are percussion ensembles, and they do. Samba. They're looking at West African cultures. They're looking at Chinese music, which you would have seen when we had that going at American School of The Hague, where students were involved in lots of different types of music from around the world, but in a way that they were truly engaged in it. They mm-hmm. weren't just, it wasn't a one-off. And when you look at then Smithsonian Folkways, which I'm also involved in teaching world music pedagogy, it's called. What we do is help teachers start from the very beginning. And okay, it's listening. Have your kids listen. Have them listen for one thing. Play an unfamiliar music and have them listen for one thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of what I do as well at the beginning of each class, doesn't matter what type of music class it is, let's just listen to this. Okay, is there a steady beat? Or what do you think the music is being played on, or do you hear voices or instruments or both, but have them listen for that one thing. And the next step is then in this listening that they, if there is a steady beat, then they clap or play along with it. So that's more of an inactive. And engaged listening then is where they, you can turn the recording off and they're still clapping or playing along with it or singing along with it. Mm-hmm. And then the next step is creative listening. They're making up their own stuff that goes along with it. And then the final stage is where they're looking at the context and seeing where that music fits into the culture, but it is a way in. And so again, looking ahead would be for programs that are thinking, we're not sure how to get there. Then looking at this methodology from Smithsonian Folkways that says, you know, just start at a simple place. So that's what I see, is this student-centered idea.
I know you've got to run off class pretty soon, so I'd like to wrap this up a little bit. Are there any closing thoughts or ideas that you'd like to share to the global music public?
Yeah, I think, for example, I have taught a number of courses now online and face-to-face of world music pedagogy and also being involved in the big gig and working with teachers at conferences. And I think, you know, I have seen teachers who are saying, I really want to be able to do this. And, oh, okay, this is a good idea. I can do this in my classroom. And it really is saying to teachers, be ready to talk to your administrators or talk to them now about where music is going, where music education specifically is going. Be the one who's going to be the catalyst to say, yeah, we've got to be really looking at what our students are interested in. What are they listening to? What are they playing? What do they want to play? Because we can offer that. And if you are a teacher who is thinking, you know, no, I like what I'm doing and I can live with this the way it is, then I would say, maybe you're going to at some point have to move out of the way, because there are going to be people coming in who say, oof, we are reaching only a tiny percentage of our students in our program right now, or we are reaching a percentage that is okay with playing a small repertoire of what the world has to offer. And I don't mean it in sort of a negative way, but I mean it in a positive way that teachers, as music people, we have the ability already. As musicians, we can learn.
Right.
We can learn how to do this, as you and I have realized too, in all these places we've gone. And there are resources. And like we said, we'll make those resources available. Many, many resources. And it's again, it's not difficult, but it just takes a music teacher saying, I want to be part of where this is going. I want to be the innovative person who says, let's take this to a place where students are thriving.
Right. Jennifer, it's been a pleasure and inspiration as well, always to speak with you. It's always a joy speaking with you and sharing your thoughts. We could go on and on and on, I'm sure, but I know that you've got to get going. So on behalf of us all here, thanks for your time and for your energy and for your inspiration. It's very much appreciated. It reminds me of the good old days as well.
Yes, it is really, like we said when we spoke last time, it really is a joy to connect and reconnect and you know, learn about what we're doing and what we're doing as we finish our, or, you know, I will probably have a few more years in front of students, but as we go into a place where we're now part of moving this music education into new places and moving it forward. So thank you so much.
Great. All right. Hey, Jen, I'm going to sign off. Thanks. Thanks for everything. Okay. It's
thank
been a pleasure.
You.
Okay.
Hey, Jim.
All right.
Big hello to your family.
Will do. Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.